One type of evidence in abundance is footprints. Casts of alleged Sasquatch footprints have been made from impressions all over the world. These prints provide experts with a well-known clue: dermal ridges, better known as fingerprints. One of the best fingerprint experts in America is crime scene investigator Jimmy Chilcutt. He will examine casts of footprints for dermal ridge evidence to determine whether they were faked or whether they were caused by a known or unknown species. Our fingerprint expert, police officer Jimmy Chilcutt, examined many footprint casts in an effort to find dermal ridge patterns that point to other known primates, a hoax or a new species.
I've come to the following solid conclusion. Number one, that there is a great ape living in North America. Number two, that the friction ridges of this great ape are not human nor known primate. This conclusion may come as a shock to some people, but I stake my reputation on it.
It's actually quite unlike anything we've ever seen before.
A giant, hairy creature, part ape, part man.
In Loch Ness, a 24-mile-long bottomless lake in the highlands of Scotland, it's a creature known as the Loch Ness Monster.
Monster Talk.
Hello and welcome to Monster Talk, where skeptics discuss monsters. I'm Blake Smith, and together with my co-host, Dr. Karen Stolzno, skeptic and now one of the hosts of CFI's Point of Inquiry, and Ben Radford, managing editor of Skeptical Inquirer, we talk about monsters and science. Today we're going to interview a notable figure in the world of Bigfoot, retired crime scene investigator Jimmy Chilcutt. Chilcutt made quite a splash when he reported that he'd found evidence supporting the plausibility of a North American ape, and we'll ask him a lot of questions about his findings. But first, let's find out more about fingerprints and dermal ridges from Dr. Stolzno.
We tend to think of fingerprints as the unique patterns on our fingertips, but more specifically, these are friction ridges, the patterned raised portion of the skin, while a fingerprint itself is an impression of that friction ridge. In humans, friction ridge is a general term for the patterns found on the fingertips and palms of the hands, known as palmar prints, and those found on the toes and soles of the feet, known as plantar prints. These friction ridges are also known as epidermal or dermal ridges, or dermatoglyphs, and the scientific study of these is called dermatoglyphics. In a figurative sense, fingerprint is a metaphor used to refer to any distinguishing characteristic that is a unique marker of individual personal identity. In a literal sense, a fingerprint is indeed unique. It is a unique marker of individual physical identity. No two individuals have the exact same friction ridge arrangement, and a fingerprint pattern is never repeated. Interestingly, identical twins have the same DNA configuration, but they do not have identical friction ridge configuration, although their fingerprints are about 95% alike. But there is an inheritable quality to fingerprints. The pattern types, such as whorls, loops, and arches, are often genetically inherited, but the individual patterns themselves are not. The exact details and arrangements of the friction ridges are random and not genetically linked. Our fingerprints are formed in utero, and this process begins in the 10th week of gestation. The patterns are preserved during the growth of the fetus, and by the 17th week of pregnancy, the fingerprints of a fetus are already established as permanent and definitive. Our fingerprints are persistent throughout our entire lives. The prints are coded underneath the skin surface and can't be destroyed by superficial skin injuries. However, rare cases of chemotherapy-induced hand-foot syndrome can cause peeling on the palms and soles, and even the loss of fingerprints. Other diseases and rashes can cause this loss too, as can labor that wears down the ridges. But this damage usually isn't permanent, and the skin will regenerate, although age can decrease the prominence of our fingerprints. There have been documented cases of people intentionally trying to alter their fingerprints to conceal their identity, But mutilating your fingerprints like this, or accidentally burning or cutting them, leaves scars that still present unique aspects and identifying features. And unique identifiable features mean that our fingerprints are a useful form of identification. In fact, they're perceived as an infallible way to verify identity. Friction ridge patterns vary within limits which allows for classification, while the unique structures allow for conclusive identification. Of course, fingerprint recognition is far from palm reading. Methods of fingerprint identification have been used by police agencies since the late 19th century, and now fingerprint analysis is commonly used in forensic research and for biometrics. Fingerprints are unique to individual humans, but not unique to humans. Other primates also have fingerprints, as do a few non-primates such as koalas and fishes. They're a member of the weasel family. However, fisher prints differ in that they're made up of patterns of dots instead of ridges. Some primates even have fingerprints on their prehensile tails. Fingerprints evolved in animals that required a great deal of manual dexterity for climbing and for grasping objects. Friction ridges have become gripping surfaces like tread for fingers. Other species may also have unique patterns in their tracks, and this information might assist in their conservation, such as for counting numbers of animals in the wild. Since gorillas, chimpanzees, and other primates have friction ridges on their hands and feet, if Bigfoot exists, we should be able to find friction ridges on those infamous footprints. Have the dermal ridges of a Bigfoot already been discovered?
Monster Talk.
And today, of course, we're going to end up talking with who? Jimmy Chilcutt. That's right.
Jimmy.
We've gotten so many questions from listeners, and they mostly want to know about Matt Crowley's work. So Matt is a Bigfoot aficionado. I'm not sure that's the right word. Bigfoot enthusiast? I don't know. He was someone who was interested in the question of whether Bigfoot was real. And he got very interested in this, the dermatoglyphics, and came to the conclusion that it's possible that some of the what Chilcutt sees as dermal ridges are actually what Chilcutt calls casting artifacts, and Crowley calls, let's say, desiccation ridges. So there's several different terms. We'll have to get all that straightened out. Did either of you get to watch the National Geographic Bigfoot documentary last night?
No.
I have
to. Anyone know?
Oh, wow. I have to say, I was really disappointed. Usually National Geographic does a really good job of giving, I guess, a balanced view between the skeptics and believers on topics. This particular one was about Bigfoot, and it's the first new documentary besides Monster Quest, if you can count Monster Quest as a documentary.
Talking in scare quotes.
Yeah, that would be scare quotes, exactly. And the delivery of the material seemed to be funneled through Jeff Meldrum and a guy named Bill Munns. And Munns is the guy who's done a lot of special effects work, and he's studied the Bigfoot question for quite a long time. And he's also the person who's made a Gigantopithecus that you see a lot of times. I think it's an upright presentation of the creature. Now, in the multiple experts we've talked to on our show have indicated that they believe that since we don't really have full skeletal remains for Gigantopithecus, that it's likely that the creature didn't stand upright, that he used his moved like an orangutan. Mm-hmm. Whether that's right or not, it was interesting in that they got a first generation copy of the Patterson film from Patty Patterson. And he took an old projector and frame by frame shot high resolution photos of the frames and then used that to do a motion correction so that you can see the creature. Motion correction or stabilizations have been done before. But this was really pretty. I mean, that's nice. But in his analysis, they used animatics, which are the little digital models that you can use to recreate action, or maybe like if you're doing a film, you can do a computer version of the action before you block it out and shoot it. In a lot of these documentaries lately, they're using animatics to recreate scenes in historical, like they do that in Kennedy assassination documentaries, and they're doing it in Bigfoot. And in these animatics, Munns was saying that the shoulders of the creature couldn't match those of the shoulders of a human being. But the whole time, they're completely disregarding the fact that all the stories of the person in the suit involve heavy padding and makeup and helmet-type equipment, which would mean that the person in the suit wouldn't match up to the actual shoulders of the human being inside, that the shoulders of the creature would not match up. So I found it...
disingenuous?
Disingenuous, disappointing. I know that the information has to be available to the people who produced it, because all they have to do is go to the JREF boards at the James Reddy Educational Foundation, and they could find plenty of people to shoot holes in those theories, or at least give them a counterpoint to discuss about whether their idea is the right one, or whether this is really a good, strong indicator of Bigfoot. Of all the creatures we talk about on Monster Talk, Bigfoot is certainly one that I would love to be true. I think it has the most impact for humans if it were true, because having another close relative would give us all kinds of information. You know, that I don't think that's fair to make documentaries where you don't give the obvious counterpoints. You know, they're obvious to me. I assume they're obvious to lots of other Bigfooters. I don't know if they're obvious to people who watch the show and are not informed, but that's part of what our show's about, is giving the other side.
When especially for National Geographic, I mean, it's, you know, we're not talking the Learning Channel here. I mean,
right. I don't know if this is going to be a real series. I think it was called American Paranormal, and the first episode was Bigfoot, and the second episode was about ghosts.
That's a giveaway, then, isn't it?
It could
be. The title.
Right. It could be, right. So the second show is about ghosts, and okay. I vowed after watching the Bigfoot episode that if the ghost episode, if anybody pulled out an EMF detector, I was out. So about, I don't know, it was 5 or 6 minutes into the show, the EMFs came out, I was out. So I don't know how that turned out, but I really couldn't watch it last night. I just couldn't take it. We're going to have two Bigfoot episodes back to back. So we've got Jimmy Chilcutt this week, and then we've got Greg Long. So we'll be talking about Bigfoot. You know, our episodes come out every other week, but we'll be talking about Bigfoot two episodes back to back. And it should be some interesting point and counterpoint going on here.
Oh, Bigfoot all the time.
Bigfoot talk.
One thing we may have, one thing that as we go along, it might be helpful. I don't know whether he will do it or one of us can do it as we go along, or we can slug it in afterwards. But for example, references to the Skookum cast, you know, he's going to know what that is and all of us will, but the listeners won't necessarily. And so,
Let's talk about that. You want to give a brief overview of the Skookum cast? Because you've had some attempted interaction with the cast.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, the Skookum cast was supposedly a full body cast that was found during an expedition by the BFRO, the Bigfoot Research Organization. I think Matt Moneymaker was there, Rick Knoll, a couple other people. It was found in Skookum Meadows, and basically they had set out all sorts of gear and cameras and whatnot, trying to you know, track a Bigfoot. And one of the things they did was set out some bait, and so they put out some apples and other fruits near a little muddy wallow, and they came back I think overnight, and they came back the next day, and one of the team members said that he thought he saw the impression of a Bigfoot body in the mud. Unfortunately, they didn't have the presence of mind to actually have a camera there or anything that might have photographed this alleged creature. But and there's all sorts of holes in the story, and I discussed that somewhat in my article, Bigfoot at 50. But basically, it was this big amorphous blob.
Links to which will be in the show notes.
Links to which will be in the show. And it was basically this large amorphous blob that they were claiming you know, could be interpreted as a Bigfoot. And there were lots of problems, including basically they were claiming that the Bigfoot was trying to avoid leaving tracks and any sign of its presence. So instead it made a huge, I think, 15 square foot imprint in the mud while reaching for some apples, which doesn't really make sense to me. But at any rate, this was touted at the time as being basically the best evidence for Bigfoot since the '67 Patterson-Gimlin film. And I had asked Matt Moneymaker for permission to view the cast because it was, as I understand, it was his property at the time, and I was refused several times. Mr. Moneymaker didn't want any skeptics looking at it. He was very concerned that skeptics or any scientists that weren't on his short list looked at it, that they might find something that he didn't like. I finally did get a chance to see the Skookum cast at a Bigfoot convention in Idaho. That was actually when I first met Matt Crowley. So I've since seen it and done some examinations of it. But that's basically the Skookum cast in a nutshell. Although one follow up was that there were some people again were claiming that it was a Bigfoot imprint, but another person suggested it was probably a kneeling elk, and he showed. Anton Roblowski, I think, had done that, and he'd shown how a kneeling elk could make exactly the same imprint in mud that you see in the Skookum cast.
And I think most skeptics agree that the elk wallow is a much more plausible explanation. We can link to the findings by Dr. Anton Roblowski in our show notes as well.
And yet these are always touted as the best examples. That's rather telling.
Indeed.
Monster Talk.
Okay, here we go. All right, this is, we're calling from Monster Talk, and we're a skeptical science show that talks about monsters. I don't know if you got a chance to listen to our show or not. I'm going to introduce you. You are Jimmy Chilcutt. You are a longtime Texas law enforcement agent, retired now, if I understand correctly, with more than 18 years of experience doing fingerprinting.
Uh-huh.
And crime scene investigation, and also a Vietnam vet.
Yes.
Okay. And the reason we're calling you is because of your research with primate dermal ridges and the research that you found, evidence that you think supports the idea that there may be a mysterious North American ape.
That's correct.
Okay. So let's start off with some of the basics so our listeners will know who you are. Can you tell us about your background with fingerprinting and law enforcement?
Okay, well, first thing, I've got over 26 years in law enforcement. I hold a master's police officer certificate for the state of Texas, and for the last 18 years before my retirement, I was in a crime scene investigator and a latent fingerprint examiner. And, of course, as a crime scene investigator, I did just what you see on CSI. Every day, go to crime scenes and collect physical evidence from the crime scene, take it back to the lab, and process that evidence. And fingerprints happened to be my specialty. So a few years ago, back in the early 1990s, I started to do some research on trying to be able to determine gender and race by looking at the fingerprints. And I got a certain amount of accuracy, but never 100% or nothing that I could actually put in a report or do a paper on. And so I felt that the reason that I was never 100% was because of the interbreeding of the human race. And I felt that the primates, since they did not interbreed, the great apes, orangutans, chimpanzees, and gorillas and gibbons, if I studied their prints, I might be able to figure out some key that would relate to humans. So that's what got me into printing gorillas, orangutans, chimpanzees. Even I've printed a ton of monkeys also, and I've also studied the lemur prints. So subsequently, I became due to this research, became a primate fingerprint expert.
So, Jimmy, how did you actually get involved with looking at Bigfoot print casts specifically?
Well, one day, like I said, this is back in the early or late 90s, I started watching a Discovery Channel show, and Dr. Jeff Meldrum from Idaho State University was displaying some Bigfoot cast. And then he started talking about the dermatoglyphics or dermal ridges, or in my layman's term is fingerprints. I started to get interested, and he started pointing out the different patterns and the dermal ridges on the bottom of the cast. So I called him the next day and told him my went through my credentials and what I had been doing research on, and I felt that if this is a real primate, a non-human primate, then I should be able to tell the difference between if it's more like a human primate or a non-human primate. And so he allowed me to come up to Idaho State University that summer of 99, I believe it was, and I examined, you know, he has over, at that time he had about 100 castings that people had sent him or that he had cast himself. And two casts particularly caught my attention, well, actually three. The Onion Mountain, I think they're calling it now, had some great dermal ridges, and I studied that. I actually got to bring it back to Texas with me and studied it for, you know, several months to determine if this was actually dermal ridges or was it ridge artifacts or, you know, what was the deal here. And I determined due to the changes in direction of the ridges, it's over 45-degree angle changes, which is the same thing you have in a human or a primate delta on your hands and on the bottom of your feet. And but the most significant evidence for me, that what really changed my mind about, and being, I was a skeptic before, but when I examined the Walla Walla cast, now the Walla Walla cast, even though it was cast by Freeman in 87, it had scars on it. And one thing that I've learned as a crime scene investigator and a fingerprint examiner, if you cut your finger, cut a dermal ridge, cut across the dermal ridges, as the skin heals, the ridges, instead of coming back together evenly, they will curl inward and kind of curl in. And this is the same thing I saw on that Walla Walla cast. This is biological, so it has to be from a biological animal. And that was one of the things that convinced me. And also, I looked at one of Freeman's casts. I'm not sure where it was cast from, but it had, somebody had put human dermal ridges on it. And I'm not sure if it was done accidentally or done on purpose.
Now I know something about Paul Freeman, and it's my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it's my understanding that he's pretty well been dismissed as a hoaxer throughout, right? Do you believe that his casts were hoaxes, or do you think they're authentic?
Well, I'm the Walla Walla cast, you know, I have to tell you, you know, in my opinion, and it's due to that scar, it has to be, you know, in my opinion, until somebody comes up with an explanation or shows me differently, then it's my opinion that it is a biological animal. Now, one of that cast that where I felt that, and I'm not going to accuse Paul Freeman of faking anything, but that just was suspicious to me. And I think, and just as this is an opinion with no, it's just my personal opinion, just from looking at that cast, not the Walla Walla cast, but this one where it had human fingerprints in it, and you could tell there were human fingerprints. There was no question about it. But I think that may have been a real Bigfoot cast, a footprint, and he may have tried to embellish, and that may be what got him in trouble and people labeling him as a fake because, you know, he was just over-enthusiastic, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Well, and so you said that Meldrum had about 100 casts there, and how many of those did you look at, and how many did you determine any of them were hoaxes? Did you find any hoaxes at all?
Oh, yes. There were several that were obvious. Like, I think he had one that Wallace had made, and you could, that wooden footprint.
Mm-hmm.
That was so obvious. I mean, you don't even have to be an expert to look at that and tell the difference that wasn't a real cast or a real biological footprint.
Did Meldrum think it was a real cast at the time?
Did who?
Did Meldrum think that it was
no,
a real cast?
Definitely not. And he didn't try to bias my opinion. He put me loose or let me loose in his lab in these trays and trays and trays of footprint cast, and he left me alone, and I just went, took my own pace. I was there 3 days, and at my own pace, I looked at all these prints with no interruption from him. If I had a question, he would ask my question, but he did not try to influence my opinion at all. He just wanted me to look at it and tell me what I thought. And the two casts method that I pulled out. Actually, when you asked me how many I looked at all of them. And the two casts, the Onion Mountain and the Walla Walla cast, are the ones that I felt were authentic. And, you know, to this day, I say unless somebody can show me where it's not what I think it is, then I'm going to have to stick with that opinion.
Did all of the casts that you found dermal ridges on, did they also have the mid-tarsal break that Jeff likes to use for authentication?
Yes.
Okay.
As far as I know.
Oh, okay. To the best of your memory.
And I'm not, I didn't know anything about a mid-tarsal break until I started listening to Jeff Meldrum, being not a in that field.
Gotcha.
So if I remember correctly, both of those did have that or an allusion to that. And a lot of the casts that I look at that I felt were dermal ridges, but I couldn't make a conclusion. They were just inconclusive. It looked like dermal ridges, but it could have been something else. The Onion Mountain and the Walla Walla cast, I can't think of anything else that it could have been other than dermal ridges.
I'll bring this up. I think you called them casting artifacts. And the guy who did that work, he's worked with you, Matt Crowley.
I've met Mr. Crowley, and actually we've had a roundtable conference with him and Dr. Meldrum and Rick Knoll in Jefferson, Texas, at one of the conferences. We actually sit down and we talked about the ridge artifacts. And this is something that, you know, once he started sending me the his research work, and this is, you have to remember, this was done in at his house or a laboratory, you know, controlled environment, controlled situation. And he even agreed that the Walla Walla cast, there's no way it could have been a ridge artifact.
Is there any chance that that particular print was one of these double strike bear paw prints? Could it have been any other animal making the print?
Well, I would hate to say it you know, can't be or it's impossible, because there's always, you know, the possibility. The probability would say no, because, you know, there were more ridges on that. You're talking about the Walla Walla cast with the scar, right?
With the scar, right.
Okay. Now, not only the scar is what made up my mind, but it also had the ridges had the same texture, which was the thickness of the ridge. It had the same ridge flow pattern, even though in the middle of the foot it does like a regular non-human primate, and along the side of the foot with the ridges running alongside. That's another telltale sign that it's a non-human primate print. Also, another thing, and one of the difference between the Wallace cast and the actual cast that I feel they're authentic, is that these ridges are on the side of the foot. You know, it's coming up from the bottom, and then coming the ridges going up and down are on the actual a little bit up on the side of the foot. Well, and this, the reason that we're getting those ridges on the side of the foot is because when a large animal presses down, or even human, when you press down into the soil, the flab part of your skin is going to push out, and that's where if you're in some kind of good sandy soil or clay, then you're going to make an impression on the side of your foot, because that skin pushes out. And when you release the pressure, when you step off, the skin sucks back in, you know, to its normal position. That's why you don't have any distortion there. And whereas those wooden casts of Wallace's, once you press down, it just presses down. It leaves a straight up and down mark.
And can we have a bit of an explanation of the term dermal ridge as well, as opposed to fingerprints?
Dermal ridges are, they have several names. They're fingerprints. They're also called friction ridges. And all primates, either non-human or human primates, have these friction ridges. None of the other animals, like the bears, they don't have friction ridges. They have little pads. When I was doing the printing the primates in Atlanta, Georgia, I was at Zoo Atlanta, and they gave me the opportunity to print a big tiger. And I printed a tiger just to show them the difference. And, you know, all the felines and the bears and the canines have pads instead of friction ridges. I've heard that the friction ridges are developed in order to grip. It's also for your feeling, they're real sensitive to touch and to feel.
Let me, if I can just sort of put this in context. So out of the tracks, there's a grand total of about 3 tracks. Is that right? You believe you found dermal ridges on?
Right. That's the Onion Mountain, the Walla Walla, and the Elkins Creek out of Elkins Creek, Georgia.
Are the ridge patterns on those identical?
Well, no ridge pattern is going to be identical from one animal to the next. They're the same texture, and they have the same ridge flow pattern. In other words, the texture, when I was talking about texture, I talk about, say, the thickness of the ridges, and they're about twice the thickness of the human and non-human primates like the gorillas, the thickness of the ridges.
Okay. So these would presumably be three separate individuals.
Most definitely. Yeah, there's no question about that, yes.
And yet there's only one track for each one?
Yes, that's all that I've examined. I don't know if there's any more.
Well, no, I'm just trying to do the math here, because presumably, you know, obviously a Bigfoot would have 2 feet, and if it goes any distance, you would expect that a given Bigfoot might leave thousands of tracks, tens of thousands of tracks in its lifetime. It's just very odd to me that we would only have 3 tracks, and they would all be different.
Well, three tracks with dermal ridges. Now, if you, and I'm not sure because I wasn't there when these tracks were cast, but I think the Onion Mountain, I think there were several casts that John Green cast that were going down the road. The only one, I've only seen one. There were several footprints, but the only one that Jeff Meldrum had that I saw was that one. Walla Walla cast, there were two casts, I think a left foot and a right foot.
So if John Green has some more from the same series, then that would be really important if you could find the same ridge marks within the same series, right?
Well, if it's the same foot and the same animal, they should, you know, make a positive identification, yes.
Okay. I wonder if he's, well, maybe, you know, maybe he's got those and would share them if at some point. That'd be nice.
You know, I'm not sure.
Well, I mean, just my assumption is that given how much attention has been paid to dermal ridges in the Bigfoot community, that I would assume that there would be far more research and far more casts that would have been shown to you and others about this. But
yeah, well, see, Jeff, I think this Onion Mountain cast was sent to Jeff, or Dr. Meldrum. So I'm not sure. I can't say that there's not others. I'm just saying I haven't examined any others. Now, when I was in Willow Creek at the International Bigfoot Symposium, I did see at the Bigfoot Museum, I did look at several other casts that had indications of dermal ridges. But those are the only 3 casts that I would say, yes, in my opinion, these are dermal ridges.
So, in your opinion, what makes these particular examples, what makes these the dermal ridges of a Bigfoot rather than any other animal? Or
oh, I'm not saying that it's a. I'm just saying it's a primate.
Okay.
I don't remember ever, and I may have, but I don't remember ever saying that this is a Bigfoot, because I just say this is a non-human primate.
Gotcha.
And the reason that I'm, and this is what I will tell you this, the reason I distinguish it from a human primate and non-human primate is because of those ridges running along the side of the foot. Humans, the ridges do not do that. If you'll take off your shoes and socks and look at the bottom, have somebody look at the bottom of your feet, you'll see that the ridges run across the width of the foot and then just start dying out and fade out. On the ones, the cast that I've examined, the ridges will run right along the side of the foot, some of the ridges. That's the difference, and that's how I tell the difference between a primate, a human primate, and a non-human primate. If you look at a gorilla footprint, if you look up on the side of the foot, just a little bit up off the bottom, you'll see that the ridges are running up and down the length of the foot. Humans do not do that.
What kind of primates do you think left these casts, or sorry, these prints?
Oh, I don't know, because I'm not a primate expert. I'm just telling you that the dermal ridges are non-human primates.
Did you get good enough with your investigations that you could, like, if you saw a gorilla print, could you ID it was a gorilla?
To a certain extent, I could do the difference between gorillas and orangutans are pretty unique. The difference between monkeys can be separated from all the great apes. The lemurs can be separated. You can tell those, the lemurs, the monkeys, and the great apes. You can tell those three classes, you can tell the difference easily. The orangutans are separate from the gorillas and the chimpanzees. The gorillas and the chimpanzees are pretty close together.
Gotcha.
Yeah, they're hardest to tell.
Someone had mentioned earlier the talking with Matt Crowley. Do you accept his explanations, or what's? It wasn't clear to me whether you agree with him or whether you.
Well, I mean, he has shown me his work, and he has sent me little tiles. Now, and I'm saying that since I've seen Matt's work, that I have to be more careful to make sure that what I'm looking at is not ridge artifacts. So I agree with his work, and I admit that yes, it can be done because of his work. Now, one thing I will have to say, and I'm not an expert on plaster or the material used, the dental stone or plaster. I'm not an expert on how they react, but the tiles that he sent me, they were like if it was a 3x3 tile. The whole thing was covered with ridge artifacts. Now, on these castings that I've examined, they're not. And you would think and one of the reasons is because when you're walking through the woods or you're in a soft area, you know, the whole foot, you don't get a good impression of all the dermal ridges because of all the leaves and the vegetation. But if you hit a muddy riverbank and it's got good clay that it'll take, it's still going to have stuff in there that's going to cover up the dermal ridges. So what I'm saying is, if you have a cast that's got partially it's got some leaves in it and it's got a nice area that would take the impression of dermal ridges, and if you cast that, if they're not ridge artifacts, then just the ridges are going to or just the area that was exposed to the good soil is going to be ridges. According to Matt, the way he poured it, no matter what surface it was in, the whole cast would have been had ridges on it.
I think.
Does that make sense? Does anybody understand what I just said?
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, and I think in he went on further with his research since then, and it made a lot of different size. It changed the size of his castings and some other things. So I know he's done a couple more years worth of stuff that he's put up on his website, and a lot of it has to do with the substrate that is put into. You know exactly.
Yeah.
In more realistic substrates, I think he was getting findings that were more consistent with what were on those prints. So I don't know if you've had a chance to look at his website or not, but I'll shoot you an email with the link and you can take a look. And if you want,
okay. I think he's done some great work, and I think that that everybody should be aware when you're looking at dermal ridges. Is that dermal ridges or is it ridge artifacts? Again, I'm not an expert in the pouring and the material used. But when I talked to Rick Noel, Rick Noel says, because he's supposedly an expert in casting, and when he did the Skookum cast, mm-hmm. and I saw some indication of dermal ridges on the Skookum cast, but again, not clear enough for me to make a positive ID as there being dermal ridges. But I certainly didn't see any ridge artifacts, and he claims that his cast will not have ridge artifacts because of the way he mixes it and pours it.
How would you, just so I'm understanding, what characteristics objects would you find distinguishing between desiccation ridges and dermal ridges? I mean, if you acknowledge that they can be identical, then if you are just shown a patch, regardless of the entire thing, if you're just shown a section, what would distinguish for you that it was, in fact, a dermal ridge instead of a desiccation ridge?
Well, I would have to have enough, and I would have to see just about, if you look at your hand, just about any place on your hand or several places on your hand, there's what's called deltas. And the ridges change directions over 45 degrees. A delta is a little triangular area where the ridges converge and then deviate. So that's what I'm looking for, because that means it's more biological. I've never seen, to this day, I've never seen Matt's ridge artifacts where it actually changes direction. I'm not talking about on a flat surface. I'm talking about on a rounded surface where it's actually changing and going up, or if it's going along along the side of the tile and then changes direction 45 degrees going up. I haven't seen that.
Now, a lot of people are sending you prints now, right? I mean, you've become sort of a nexus for trying to find if the prints people are finding are contain dermal ridges. When Jeff Meldrum did the investigation, there was a Canadian cabin that was supposedly attacked by a Sasquatch, and it had all kinds of hard, you know, smooth surfaces, you know, the doors, the windows, there was refrigerators. Has anybody sent you anything like that where they were, instead of a footprint or cast, something, are you getting any samples where they think maybe a Sasquatch or something has touched and left a handprint or a...
Okay, you're talking about laden prints from a Sasquatch.
Exactly.
Yes. As a matter of fact, they have, and most, in fact, all of them have turned out to be humans, every one they've sent. And I've, you know, when people call me and say, what can I do to preserve this? I've had people send me jelly jars that they've had put out at bait, and I've done the process myself. I don't do that anymore. I usually tell them how to get the print equipment and tell them how to do it, and you know, and they'll do their own prints and send them to me. But to date, I have not found an authentic that I would feel is authentic non-human primate prints, latent prints that they've sent me, that they've actually lifted off of a surface. Now, I've had some of them off of a window that had just been inconclusive, that they weren't, they dusted it out and they were smeared by the animal or by the person, that I just, you know, I had to say I can't tell one way or the other. The results are inconclusive. But most of the times that I've been sent, it's without a question human dermal ridges.
And I hear that you examined one case from Australia as well, of the Yowie. Could you tell us about that?
One of the Australian production crews in one of the documentaries that I did several years ago, one of the crew members had a, and I think that was a three-toed Yowie cast, and there was no dermal ridges on it. He happened to look at it, and I looked at it, and there was no dermal ridges. You have to remember that getting dermal ridges in a out in the woods is just very unlikely. It's very very rare. That's why I had, out of, you know, the 100 that I examined, only 2 or 3, you know, had dermal ridges or good visible dermal ridges.
Would it be possible to construct, you know, people put out traps for different things, like trying to get prints or trying to get hair? Would it be possible to construct something to try to get footprints and get that kind of a finding record? I mean, like, what could you put out? I don't know. You know, I'm just off the top of my head, concrete powder or something like that in an area to try to get better print quality.
Yeah, and so having said that, I'll give you a little story that when before the Skookum cast was found and cast, that production crew was here in Conroe, here in Texas. And we were doing a documentary, and one of the crew members said, we're getting ready to go up, and I forget if that was in Washington or Oregon, wherever the Skookum cast was cast from. And if I seem ignorant on some of these locations and areas and some of the casts, I'm not well-versed on Bigfoot. I'm not a Bigfoot researcher. I don't want to go out and look for him. I don't follow the people who do. I do examine their evidence, and I do, you know, give them some advice. So forgive me if I sound ignorant on some of the locations. But anyway, before they went up to do the Skookum shoot, one of the crew members, when we were on a break, they asked me what would I do in order to get a good, clear, without a doubt, footprint with dermal ridges. And I would say, well, if you're going to, and I told them that if you're going to, you know, out in the woods, you need to bait an area and clean that area out, or some places on it, clean that area out so that you've got good soil and get all the leaves and twigs out of the way. And that's exactly what they did, and that's how they got the Skookum cast.
So what's your opinion of the Skookum cast at this point?
Inconclusive as far as I'm concerned, because the only thing I can tell you that I'm an expert in is the dermal ridges. And even though I saw dermal ridges that had the same texture, I saw ridges on there that had the same texture. It had the same pattern flow getting ready to go up the side of the foot, but it was the heel. So, you know, there really wasn't enough, and they didn't change direction, so, you know, there was nothing. It did have the characteristics of footprints, like the bifurcations, the ending ridges. And I'm sure if you've watched CSI enough, you understand that the way we make positive identifications and put bad guys in jail is through characteristics, because everybody has one of three patterns on their fingerprints, and that's arches, loops, and whorls. It's the individual characteristics inside those pattern area that enabled us to make a positive identification. So even though I did see the characteristics, there just wasn't enough for me to say, yes, this is a dermal ridge. So Skookum cast is, you know, since I'm not an anthropologist or a biologist, I can't tell you the anatomy that they found, whether it be animal or, you know, I just don't know.
I think that the latest analysis of that was probably that it was a kneeling elk. I've seen some pretty convincing evidence for that. If that's true, then what would that say about your conclusion that there may be dermal ridges on it?
Then what is that? What they're saying is an Achilles tendon in the heel. What are they saying that is?
Well, I think depending on which part you're looking at, I think he's assuming that that's one of the ankles of the elk, which would presumably be covered with fur, I would guess.
Now see, that's the part that they actually sent me the two sections of that small sections of that Skookum cast, and I saw the hair above the Achilles tendon, and then the heel. To me, it looked like a heel and an Achilles tendon, and there was hair above that. So I'm not familiar with any conclusive evidence that it is actually an elk. I just don't know.
But that's interesting. They sent you a subsection of the whole casting to look at?
Yes.
So have you ever examined the rest of it?
I've looked at it, but I haven't sat down and examined it, because that was the only part that had of the foot.
Okay.
The rest of it was supposed to be hips and, you know, buttocks and, you know, elbow.
But it would have mattered if you'd found similar patterns elsewhere in your examinations. So, okay.
But let me quickly go back to some of the tracks. Now, one of the tracks, Crowley, he refers to as the CA-19 cast. CA-19, do you know if that's the Onion Mountain cast?
I've never heard of that terminology. TA-19?
CA.
I think
it's CA-19.
Yeah, California 19 is what I think it stands for. It's Meldrum's designation.
Okay. No, when I looked at that cast, Meldrum first told me it was, and I wrote it down in my reports, but it was the Blue Mountain cast in 1967. And that's how, for years, that's how I identified that cast. And then just in the recent last 3 or 4 years, they started calling it the Onion Mountain cast.
And was that one of Freeman's?
No, this is John Green's.
Okay, because I know there was some question about the chain of custody regarding one of the cast, the CA-19 cast, and the question then came, where did the cast come from? And of course, if you don't know where it came from, then that really throws a monkey wrench in the process.
Sure. Monkey. And actually, today you're saying that the first time I've ever heard that designation.
Yeah, that is something Meldrum wrote on him in marker, like it says CA-19.
Okay.
I assume that all of his that he has some kind of way he keeps track of all of them. Is the only thing I can figure. But yeah, in handwritten on it, it says Onion Mountain, August 1967.
Okay, then that's probably the cast, and it's about a 13-inch cast.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds like the one, but I've never heard it with that other designation that you just said. So.
Okay.
Yeah, I was only asking just because again there was some doubts raised about not only its authenticity but its chain of custody. You know, where exactly did it come from? Who made it? When? Obviously, that's, you know, on your end of things, you're just examining the cast. It's not your responsibility to make sure where it came from, but.
Well, I asked them, you know, what do I call this cast for future reference? And Meldrum always gave me a name to call it so that he could identify it later on. And it's my understanding, and I don't know, it's kind of like when you were a kid, you sit around and you played the game gossip, or you say something to the next guy and he says it to the next guy, and the time it gets all the way around the table, it's all distorted, right?
Well, Chinese whispers.
That seems to be what's happening on this. The way I understand this cast is John Green cast this, and there was a series of casts that, and somebody, and if I remember, I talked to John Green, and if I remember correctly, he told me that he actually saw the dermal ridges in the footprint before he cast it. And so, you know. That's to the best of my recollection.
So, besides dermal ridges, I know that. Have you also found sweat pores in one of your casts?
No. Well, nothing that. Well, yeah. The I'm trying to think now. The Elkins Creek. When I looked at that close up, it appeared to be sweat pores in the ridges of that cast. And as a crime scene investigator, when I would go out and lift prints. Often I would, when I would lift latent prints, they would be sweat pores in the latent prints. But, and I think when I made that statement, I said appeared to be.
Yeah, and I think coming from law enforcement, you have to couch this. I mean, that you're trained to be careful about what you say. I hope.
Right. Yes, and sometimes, you know, I'm just a human being too, and sometimes I'll get my tongue behind my eye teeth and not be able, you know, I'll missay something. There's no, you know, no question about it. I can make a mistake, a verbal mistake. So I try to be very, very careful and not make a positive statement unless I'm positive.
And are there any other fingerprint experts who've examined these casts and come to the same conclusion? So has there been any peer review of your work?
The Krantz, Grover Krantz had a... latent fingerprint examiner examined some of the castings he has and that I have not seen and I've not examined. And that examiner, if I remember correctly, said that they were, you know, dermal ridges. And that was all. He wouldn't say if they're primate or non-primate. Of course, he'd never printed any gorillas or orangutans or chimpanzees, so how would he know?
But that was,
as far as I know, I'm the only law enforcement officer who's ever actually printed a variety in this many, you know, non-human primates. I spent a week there at Yerkes Primate Center printing, like I say, monkeys, orangutans, chimpanzees, gorillas, and I've got a fairly decent collection of primate prints.
You had said that, I think what Curtin was getting at was that you talked about people replicating or at least looking at Grover Krantz's work. What about your work on dermal ridges for these things? I know that in Meldrum's book, he talks about how your conclusions have been discussed with other associated people in law enforcement. So what did they say?
The people that I've actually, the latent fingerprint examiners that I've shown them to said, yes, that looks like dermal ridges. And they said it doesn't look human because it, you know, the texture.
And has anyone written anything up on this, or is it just sort of told you privately?
No, this is just something that, you know, that you talk to your, when I would go to a school or go to some kind of, law enforcement convention, I'd always bring those casts, and show my, you know, my peers and my contemporaries, to get their opinion. And, you know, everybody says, wow, looks, you know, looks like dermal ridges to me, you know. But
have you
have to
about-
remember that most of the, in fact, all of the latent fingerprint examiners that I've shown this to have nothing to compare it with other than human fingerprints. And so they're saying, yeah, that looks like dermal ridges, but it doesn't look human.
And have you thought about writing any of this up for any publication or peer-reviewed journal so that other people can learn from it?
Well, I'm not sure what they, you know, Meldrum's written up just about all my work that I've done, and I'm certainly not not an author, and I think that would be out of my realm. I would have to have help if I was to do a, you know, a book or something like that, but no, I haven't.
I'm just thinking that, you know, if what you found is accurate and valid, and they're actually, you are finding these dermal ridges, you know, that would be important for other future Bigfoot investigators and fingerprint examiners to learn from. So,
I think it has been written up, not by me, but by other. I've had people send several books that they have used, you know, my works and my findings in.
Let me ask, cause in your findings, I believe Crowley told us that if you properly prepare a trackway, then you wouldn't get desiccation ridges. It's like if you sprayed it with something like hairspray or something, that you probably wouldn't get those kind of things. Have you written up anything for people who want to try to get tracks to help kind of remove those potential false positives?
No, I haven't. And the reason, and we use the hairspray when we do shoe impressions. When we're at a crime scene going to cast a shoe impression, we use the pump hairspray to stabilize the soil. And but, you know, this is something, I know how to pour dental stone. I know how to pour casting, but I'm not an expert in it. And I'm certainly not going to tell anybody else how to do something that I'm, you know, not more versed in.
Gotcha.
I know how to do it. It's like you know, a carpenter. You know, I know how to nail nails together, but I certainly don't have the expertise that a carpenter does.
I know you probably get to talk at a lot of Bigfoot conferences. I'm sorry if we're nailing you with all these.
No, that's all right.
Okay. Feel like, I don't want you to feel like you're on the stand or something. Although you probably have been, right?
Hey, I've been cross-examined by the best of them. I'll tell you.
All right. Well,
and that's where you learn the most. You kind of say that with tongue in cheek, but I learn more about my field in the courtroom when I'm cross-examined by a good attorney. And I've gotten, you know, you improve yourself when you're cross-examined by a good attorney, and because, you know, I would be stupid to say I'm perfect and I know everything, and because I don't. So, and what I'm saying is, to the best of my knowledge. And let's look at it this way. As I told you before, I'm not a researcher. I'm not going to go out and look for this animal. I'm certainly not going to be a TV star if you've seen any of my documentaries. I'm not running for public office, and I have nothing to gain by doing this. And as my reputation as a latent fingerprint examiner is well established, so I don't have to worry about, you know, everybody, you know, kidding me about the Bigfoot thing.
I have to ask a question. That's a perfect lead into this question.
Okay.
It seems like your credibility is completely established through your work with law enforcement.
Yes.
But when I watch the documentary Legend Meets Science, there's this point in the documentary where you turn to the camera and you say that you've come to the conclusion that there's a great ape living in North America, that the friction ridges are from a great ape. But then you say you stake your reputation on this conclusion. And I don't understand why you would say that. Was that something they asked you to say? Was that scripted?
Yeah, well, you've done a documentary before also, huh? Yeah.
Well, Ben has. I haven't, but
that's a great point, because they being a professional law enforcement, I'm not usually susceptible to prods like that. But yeah, they kept saying make a positive statement or do this or that, and which is staking my reputation on it. I have a good reputation in law enforcement, and what I'm saying is that these dermal ridges or these friction ridges on the cast, they, to the best of my knowledge, to the best of, my most honest answer is yes, it does look like a primate. I've studied primates' footprints and fingerprints. I've studied human footprints and fingerprints. To the best of my knowledge, this looks like a primate, a non-human primate.
Gotcha.
So that's, yeah. And, I get in court. I'm still doing consulting work. And if you've got time for an antidote, I've got a nice story that I'd like to tell you.
Sure, go ahead.
Do you have the time?
Yeah,
sure.
Okay. Well, a lot of now, since I'm doing consulting work for the defense, a lot of prosecutors, when they see that I'm the one that's testifying for the defense, what I do for the defense is just go verify matches and the law enforcement's work. Well, sometimes we disagree and I have to go to court. So the first thing that the prosecution wants to do is try to show the jury, just belittle me a little bit. So I was in federal court in Houston, Texas, and the federal prosecutor, the first thing he asked me is, did you make a statement on TV that you believe in Bigfoot? And he just tried to make me look bad in front of the jury. And so I turned to the judge and I said, Judge, I said, this is not a yes or no answer, and it's kind of yes and kind of no, and it needs an explanation. And the prosecutor said, well, no, we don't need no explanation, just answer the question yes or no. But the judge said, wait, I'd like to hear the explanation. And it was a female judge. And so, now here's where it backfired on the prosecution. So I was allowed, and it took me about an hour, and I explained just about everything I've explained to you, how I got started, exactly what I had done, and, what I had found. And the jury were just amazed. So that really backfired on that prosecutor. And the next time I went to trial, nobody asked me about Bigfoot.
You scared him off.
Well, it sounds like you're saying that on these three casts, you see what look like friction ridges. You're the expert, and they look like friction ridges, I think as a skeptic, I can say that I'd like to see consistency somehow. I'd like to see two or three tracks from the same trackway presenting the same exact friction ridges so that you could compare.
Yeah. Now, if it's the same foot, it's going to be the exact same friction ridges.
Exactly.
And I can actually make a match just like I would for a criminal.
That's what I'd like to see, right?
Yeah. But here's the thing. Now, here's what I would like to see. And I did see this in the Walla Walla cast when I had a left and a right foot. They both had friction ridges looking the same, but the characteristics were different. And that's what we look for in criminology. We look for the difference. I'd like to see a series, maybe at least four, two left and two right, so that I could make a positive. Those two lefts are exactly the same foot, and those two rights are exactly the same foot, different from the left.
Mm-hmm.
Statistically, statistically, would you be able to identify like an individual from the amount of material you've been able to ID? I mean, it'd be really hard, wouldn't it?
Would I be able to what now?
Like, could you use the friction ridges you've identified, if they actually are from a primate, would you be able to identify that primate if you had a full print?
Most definitely. I wouldn't even have to have a full print. I'd just have the same the same area that I've got, say like the Onion Mountain. If I had a, if tomorrow somebody casts a cast of that same animal, and it's the same foot and in the same area, then I could actually match those two up.
Wow, so you get them
as being okay. The same animal. Yes, because it has characteristics. The characteristics, when you're born, when you come out of your mother's womb, you have those characteristics and those patterns, and they don't change throughout your whole life. And each and every human being that have ever walked the face of the earth is unique and individual through that characteristics in their fingerprints. No two people have ever been found to have the same fingerprints. Not even identical twins.
Interesting. Well, let me do a quick. I'm sort of doing the numbers here now. The three tracks you found were the Onion Mountain, Walla Walla, and Blue Creek, right?
No, and Elkins Creek, Georgia.
Okay, and if I'm remembering correctly, I mean, I think the most recent of those is probably Walla Walla, which I think was 84.
I
think it was mid 80s.
85 or 87. But I'm not sure. I'm not positive.
Right. Well,
try not to quote me on that, would you?
No. That's I'm not trying to nail you on a specific date. I'm just trying to figure out that it seems odd that the most recent track that certainly surfaced. I mean, there may be other ones out there, but the most recent track is almost a quarter century old.
What was the Elkins Creek? That was in the 90s, wasn't it?
You're talking about the Skookum cast?
Elkin Creek, Georgia cast.
And that was 90s?
I'm not sure, but I think it was later than the Walla Walla cast, because this was cast by a deputy sheriff in I forget the county there, but that was cast by a law enforcement officer who sent that cast to Jeff Melvin.
And it's my understanding that part of the reason why there are so few casts of the nature that show that demonstrate the dermal ridges is because, as we talked about before, you have to have a very specific substrate. If something's walking along on twigs and leaves, you're just not going to get that.
Right. You're going to get an impression. You're going to get if he's heavy enough and the soil is soft enough, you're going to get an impression and a good idea of the foot, but you're not going to get the detailed dermal ridges.
But presumably there are places that if these are in fact dermal ridges instead of artifacts from casting, then presumably then there are definitely at least a handful of places that the soil type is just right. And so what I'm trying to figure out is, there would by some estimate there would have to be tens of thousands of Bigfoot out there, each of them presumably have two legs. And so you'd be talking about literally hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of potential footprints. And it's just odd to me that there only seems to be three that have been found with that.
Well, no, that's not a good statement. It's three that I've examined.
Okay, do you know a bunch of other ones?
I doubt that I've examined all the castings that have ever been cast.
Do you know of other ones?
Well, no, but I say I doubt. Oh, I know that Grover Krantz has a collection. John Green has a collection. John Bidenmaker probably has a collection. The only collection I've seen is the Jeff collection and the few that have been sent to me since I've been doing this.
But so do you know? I mean, have you asked to? I had assumed that you had sort of gone through some of the other collections and look for...
No, not at all.
Oh, okay.
Not at all.
I'm kind of surprised that no one's done that.
No one has... and I know that... I've heard that John Green has the other Onion Mountain cast.
So, all right, well, let me just do a quick follow-up then. So, given that you've only seen a small subsection of the available footprint tracks... How many would you expect, how many more would you expect to find?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, how could I possibly answer that question?
Yeah, if it was barefoot people instead of Bigfoot, I mean, if it was barefoot people walking, would you expect to find more, than you find on these?
You would think so. But, again, You're asking me questions that I'm not.
Yeah, right. It's hypothetical.
An expert in.
Right.
And I really do try to stick with the things that I know about.
Sure.
And I try not to, do any guessing or assuming or, and that's just my nature.
Mm-hmm. No, I would have just thought that, Meldrum or you or someone else, my assumption was that if any of these other people that have these stocks of collections of Bigfoot tracks, if they had some reason to think that there may be dermal ridges, I'd be shocked if they hadn't already brought them to you years ago. But maybe I'm wrong.
And I don't know if I'm shocked or not, but I can tell you they haven't. And I'm sure Meldrum, if you talk to Dr. Meldrum, he could probably tell you, he's probably got more, have seen more of the collection than I'll ever see.
Well, I've got his book right here, and he only lists a few of them, and most of them are in reference to the work you've done.
Okay.
Right. Well, then, within the as far as the dermal ridge work, but
right.
But yeah. So, how passionate are you about this research? I mean, is this the kind of thing you seek out on your own, or do you only do it if people come to you with material and ask you to take a look at it?
I only do it unless somebody comes to me. You know, I'm in this field. I'm kind of the cheerleader. I'm telling you, they come to me, and is that really what you think? I said, yes, that's really what I think. Then these field researchers, and I've met a lot of these field researchers, and they're very passionate about what they do. I've got a life that I'm retired. I've got grandchildren. I play golf a lot. I've got a woodworking shop that I make all my grandkids' Christmas presents and stuff, and make a lot of stuff. The Bigfoot portion of my life is not even a half of 1% of my life.
Gotcha.
Okay, because I'm happy. I'm very happy to help these guys because in my heart, I believe, from the evidence that I've examined, I believe there's an animal out there, and I'm hoping that somebody out there will do a live capture or, I hate to see the body. I'm not an advocate of killing one of these animals, but I'd like to see a live capture. And I'd like to see the hoaxers, quit it and let the serious researchers, do their research.
Amen.
Well, you're from Texas. I mean, I thought that isn't there more of a shoot and kill one attitude down there about Bigfoot?
Well, maybe. And I'm a fifth generation Texas, but also, I'm an individual and I have my opinion.
Right, there you go. Okay.
I'm not a crowd follower. I'm old enough to think for myself, and I'm a Vietnam veteran. I've seen enough killing. As a crime scene investigator, I've seen more bodies than I'll ever want to see again. I've got a Purple Heart. Got wounded in Vietnam. When I retired, I said to myself, I want to live a peaceful life, and I don't want to see any more dead bodies. I don't even hunt animals.
Wow.
I'm not a deer hunter, and try to be from Texas and not a deer hunter.
You do eat barbecue, though, right?
I do eat barbecue.
Okay,
yes, sir.
Okay.
But Jimmy, you approached Jeff Meldrum, to begin with, didn't you?
I'm
initially,
sorry?
You approached Jeff Meldrum originally, didn't you?
Yes, I did, because I felt that that my expertise as a primate fingerprint examiner, or having expertise in primate fingerprints, I felt that I could add something. I really thought that I would, and I think in the back of my mind, when I was driving up to Idaho, I felt that I was going to, I wasted a trip and I wasted a week, because I was going to get up there and find hoaxes and, stuff. Because it's hard to fool, I work here, I do this for a living, so it's going to be hard to fool me. And I really thought that I would debunk everything he had. And I didn't make a snap decision. I took those two castings back to Texas with me, and I examined them in my lab, and I put them under the laser. I did cross illumination on it. I thought of every way I could think of that these were not dermal ridges.
Hmm.
But I failed in that quest.
Oh, actually, we had some questions from listeners. If you have a couple more minutes,
sure.
One of the questions was: do any other animals have prints like humans?
No. other than the primates.
Okay. I guess they had heard that maybe the koalas do, but they were wondering about that. So
okay, koala, I don't know. That's right, a good point. I've heard that before.
And their hands would probably be a lot smaller than a human.
Right.
Right. So
I don't think you'd get a koala mixed up with a gorilla or orangutan or a human. But that's a good point though. All the I've been taught that only primates have dermal ridges.
Okay. And the next one was, have you ever tried to create a Bigfoot cast by yourself, like seen from a print?
No, not at all.
Okay.
You talk about...
They didn't specify. They just want to know if you'd ever tried to do one yourself. I don't assume they mean hoax one, but I mean just to like try to pour a cast and get from an actual Bigfoot print.
No, we did. When I first started doing this... In our lab, we made I think we copied one, because all the officers wanted to put one outside my window as a joke.
Oh, I see.
believe me, when I first started doing this, I did take a little razzing about it.
As a CSI investigator, right. I guess what they mean is you wouldn't normally accept evidence prepared by amateur people. Is that a problem?
Well, not you got the wrong word there. Evidence not prepared, but evidence collected.
Collected, okay.
Yes, I would take we take evidence that are collected by amateurs all the time.
Ah, good point. Okay,
but we have to process this evidence. In other words, somebody said, "Here's a Coke can that we think the bad guy touched." Sure, and we don't, we don't determine. We process it, lift the prints, and we match it, if it's, and we don't, like I say, if it's a suspect that we were looking at and his prints are on the Coke can, then he has to explain why his prints are on the Coke can. But you're talking about someone trying to fake evidence and give it to us.
Yeah.
Okay.
Was that ever an issue in law enforcement? I mean,
chain of custody is an issue, but not actually the evidence itself. We have to be careful where it come from and it's not contaminated. And an amateur can, or a professional, like our officers, we have to worry about officers contaminating or messing up evidence as much as we do civilians. And when we go into a house burglary, it's all the evidence is contaminated in some way or another.
I want to say I thank you very much for all your time. You've been very gracious with your time, and we appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you
for having me.
Monster Talk.
Well, that was our interview with retired Texas lawman Jimmy Chilcutt. Links to several items related to this interview will be in the show notes. I'm Blake Smith, and on behalf of Dr. Karen Stolzno and Ben Radford, I want to thank you for listening. Monster Talk is made possible by our friends at Skeptic Magazine. We wouldn't have this platform for skepticism, and certainly not the audience size we have, if it weren't for the particular effort of Daniel Loxton. Daniel's first English-language book has just been released, and if you like the kind of science and wonder we try to embrace here at Monster Talk, you'll love this book. It's called Evolution, How We and All Living Things Came to Be. And Daniel didn't ask me to say anything about this, but I bought a copy and my kids love it. Got a little scientist in your life? They'll love it too. It's beautifully illustrated and written in a language that kids or even creationists can understand. Links to get a copy and also to support the Skeptic Society are at skeptic.com. Music for today's episode by Peach Stealing Monkeys and Sinfonia Electronique. Thanks for listening.
Want to stay abreast of the latest from Skeptic Magazine and the Skeptic Society? Want cutting-edge skeptical articles delivered straight to your inbox every week? Then subscribe to eSkeptic, the free electronic newsletter of the Skeptic Society. Visit skeptic.com to sign up.